Backseat Producers, episode number 287, Amour.
Hey, this is Tony.
Hey, this is Darren.
This is David.
We are the Backseat Producers.
Did you bring a guitar? I don't have a guitar.
Well,
I guess no guitar cast tonight.
Guess not.
Guess I'll have to let you two carry the load on that one.
Share the load.
I can play air guitar.
Play that right now.
So, skin flute. My DVR has like 100 items on it.
Tony, you gotta trim.
None of them are mine.
Family needs trim.
Well, some of them were mine, but I've watched them. Now they're waiting for Julie to watch. Mm. So. Basically, I had nothing to watch last night.
Tony, where's this going?
Well, I take that back. It was the night before. Because last night I watched Amour. Night before last.
We were watching it like the same time, and I was like 20 minutes ahead of you. Oh, Tony, just wait for it.
So I was flipping around. It was like 11:30. It was like 11:35, and I saw that Saw was on. It was on at 11:30, so I missed like the first 5 minutes. I have never seen this movie.
Tony.
I've complained about it. But I've never
You've never seen it, but you complained about it? Tell
me. So that's why I decided I'm going to correct the situation.
Yeah,
so I did.
Appreciate that.
I was surprised that Cary Elwes was in it.
Who's Cary Elwes?
Ugh.
He was in Princess Bride. He was in
Robin Hood.
Men in Tights. Robin Hood Men in Tights. He was Robin Hood.
Oh, yeah, the blonde guy.
Yeah.
The guy
that has gotten really puffy.
Oh, right.
In the last couple of years, he's gotten pretty
bulked up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This guy.
So, he's in it. Danny Glover's in it.
Danny Glover. Oh, yeah, I knew that.
The guy that was in Lost and is now in Person of Interest. I can't remember his name.
Michael.
Something. He was in it. So I was pretty on board with this movie.
That Cary Elwes guy was in Hansel and Gretel Get Baked.
That's not a surprise. He sometimes needs a paycheck.
Contractual obligation film.
So, I watched Saw.
That was a mistake, but go ahead.
And now I can confidently say, after having seen it, that I am not watching any more Saw movies.
But Tony, there's like eight
now
more.
Now you make a reasonably formed opinion.
I have formed an opinion based on things that I've seen. And until the last 5 minutes of the movie, I was like, I might actually see more of this. And then it got really like, now we're going to just keep twisting things. And, oh wait, no, here's another twist. And wait, no. Here's another, they like Lord of the Rings, the twists at the end of this thing. Like, it was like twist after twist after twist.
Oh, there's no twist at the end of Lord of the Rings?
No, but they, like,
spoiler.
The endings.
Oh.
Like, okay.
Yeah, they do that a lot.
That's enough. You can end now. Well, yeah. Oh, wait.
Nope.
Oh, here's another ending.
Oh,
there's another ending. They did the same thing, but with twists in this. And it was like, it.
So it was a confusing mess.
It was very clear. And
it was a clear mess.
Very predictable where all the twists were. That was just it. Like, all the twists were really, really predictable. But there were like seven of them, like right at the end. It's like, wait, here's another twist. It really wasn't this guy. It was this guy. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't that guy. It's this guy.
I don't think it was for you.
No.
The movie's not really for anybody. It's awful.
It wasn't great. That was the night before last. And then last night I saw him. And next week we're watching Dread.
It's kind of like watching Amour 2.
Return of the Pigeon.
All right. So, Daryl, what'd you think?
This movie is best described as tediously interesting or tediously fascinating.
Hmm. I agree with tediously interesting. Admittedly, I watched the entire movie. But this movie was really boring in a lot of places. So I was looking down at my laptop. Only this movie is subtitled. So I would look up and catch the last half of what somebody was saying. And I did not go back.
you don't speak French.
I don't speak French, but I kind of, it's close enough to Spanish that every once in a while I could suss out what they were saying.
Sure, sure. I like this movie. It was slow, and it felt very authentic.
Yes.
In ways that we'll talk about.
I would never watch this movie.
I don't know that I ever need to see it again. I'm glad I saw it. I don't know that I need to see it again.
Still one time.
Yeah. What's interesting is that after I told people I watched it, they're like, oh, is that a sad movie?
And yes!
I really wouldn't call it sad.
Really?
Really. No part of it was I sad. And I think that's because your first experience with the couple is she's having, they go to the concert, they come back, and then she's had a stroke. And then it's like you don't really get too much of them as just a normal couple before the tragedy happens.
So, okay, so maybe sad is probably not the word I would use.
I don't think sad's the word I'd use.
More tragic.
Tragic isn't exactly the word I would use either.
The thing is, they start off from a rather high point, and we see the deterioration of the whole relationship all the way down to the very end.
That's
I
just it.
I don't feel that the relationship deteriorates.
That's just it. And that's why I don't feel it's sad, because I don't feel that the relationship deteriorates at all. Her health, her mental state, her memory, her ability to take care of herself, they all diminish. But I don't think his love for her ever wavers at any point. And for me, that's why it's not sad.
So this movie, to me, is what Saw is supposed to be. Like, Saw is designed to harp on a lot of classic fears and exploit those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of blood and broken glass, which is a huge trigger for humanity in general for some
right.
reason. This movie, to me, is that. Like, this is the sum total of all the fears that I have over the next 20 years of my life.
This is a horror movie about things that really happen to people every day.
Yes, this is the scariest movie I have seen in a long time.
That's fair.
Like, when they're at the kitchen table, and, like, she just becomes non-responsive, and he's like, what the shit? goes into the other room, and he starts getting ready, and he comes back. He's like, what the hell was that? Oh, what are you talking about? Are you messing with me?
Yeah.
We gotta call the doctor. No. We gotta call the doctor.
I think you're messing with me now.
Yeah.
He's like, why is your shirt all wet then?
Yeah. These are things that are terrifying that will happen.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, they will. They could.
The normal course of events, I am not concerned about a nuclear holocaust or a zombocalypse.
Or somebody kidnapping you and putting you into a murder room.
Yeah, that's more likely than the other two. But
you do go to Gen Con and
I know.
More Dragon Con, I think, is the murder
more
room
Dragon
scenario.
Murder room scenario. But, you know, that's more likely, but still not likely.
Right.
Like, this is likely. This is probably, if cancer doesn't kill one of us, this is probably going to happen. Like, Alzheimer's runs in my family. This will probably happen to me at some point.
It's going to happen to all of us at some point.
Yeah, I know. In the scenario, I'm the woman. That was the swap for me. Like, this
sure.
will happen to Melina and I at some point. Like, as soon as it starts happening, she's like, yeah, I don't want to live anymore because I'm just going to become a burden. Like, that was fantastic. Like, that was first thing right out of the gate. Yep. I don't want to be here anymore for this. This already sucks.
Yeah.
It's only going to get worse. Spoiler. It does.
It gets worse.
Yes, and just to throw a personal note on this, my uncle right now is going through this same scenario with my Aunt Polly. She is deteriorating fast.
Yeah.
And to the point that he's almost can't take care of her anymore. And I had another similar scenario that happened to another relative in a similar situation. She was in a more or less living together scenario with her boyfriend. She had a stroke. Became almost completely incapacitated, and he walked out of her life because he didn't want to be responsible for her care. So it happens. It happens. Fortunately, the family stepped in and picked up the pieces there.
Yep.
But she was in this relationship with this guy for 20 some years, and
whoa.
He just says, "Well, you know, you're sick. I don't want to take care of you. Goodbye."
Mm-hmm.
And like up and just left. So it's kind of an injury. You can see both sides of some of the couples who will stay devoted to each other to the bitter, bitter end, and others that will just, you know, buck at the first opportunity when things get tough.
Right.
And,
which
you can sympathize with George quite a bit. He is trying to do the right thing. He's trying to keep Annette going. He doesn't want to accept the fact that she's deteriorating until the very end. Because she does, she keeps saying, you know, I don't want to be a burden on you, and
now, see,
he
I don't
wants
think,
to keep her moving.
I don't even think that's the case. I think he is very realistic about what's happening to her.
Yeah.
And the reason
not
I say that
first, not at first, he thinks he can tough this out when he starts accepting the fact, oh, I have to get a nurse now because she's getting way, the second stroke was she's at that point almost completely incapacitated.
Right, but I think that's the. That's why I think that he does have a good handle the whole way through.
Mm-hmm.
Because he does see that, okay, now it's time to get more help. And now I need a second nurse. And that second nurse is worthless. So now I'm going to get rid of her.
Was she actually worthless?
I don't know.
No,
I didn't get that.
Because then there was the scene, he's like, I'm firing you. And I'm like, wait, did something happen?
She left the window open.
Oh.
That's the only thing I can think of that she did.
Crazy Parisian air with stroke-inducing pollution.
Yeah. I didn't get why he fired her. I think it was because he had the rule that we keep the windows closed and she didn't.
Was that a rule?
I don't
know.
I don't think it was an established rule other than maybe just something he imagined.
Not only that, but I think he was trying to not let the outside world come in. He was trying to keep her in this little bubble.
The whole time was set in their apartment.
Right.
With the exception of, I was thinking about this today.
The theater.
With the exception of the theater at the very beginning, everything was set in their apartment.
Right. But the thing is, after a while, he starts closing her door because he doesn't want anybody else to see her. And he even pushes his own daughter away on this sort of stuff. And, you know, I thought that strange. You know, he tries to just isolate himself and her together and not let anybody else into this relationship. I mean, his own daughter was trying to say, you know, how can I help? How can I help?
I'm going to... Damn it, Julie. I'm going to turn her phone off.
I'll wait here, Tony.
She was trying to.
Tony, I'll wait here.
You do that.
Tony, you see me over here? I'm waiting.
Hey.
Fireball? No, I don't. Well, I do, but I don't.
The thing is, though, in this whole thing, Annette is taking the realistic view. She knows.
Anna.
She knows.
Oh, you guys must be really watched. You got names.
Anna and George.
Yes, and she's the one in the relationship who's kind of like realistic about it at the beginning because she says to him all the time, you know, I don't want to live like this. I don't want to be in a home. I don't want to be in a hospital. I don't want to live like, you know, this at all. But, you know, George is the one who keeps trying to make her comfortable, trying to keep her going, even though she's given up long before he has.
Yes.
To be
this
fair.
This movie was what I wanted The Notebook to be.
Because
I saw parts of The Notebook. And it was a movie that where...
The Notebook run of Ryan Gosling. Sorry.
That's true.
Have you seen Crazy Stupid Love?
Terrible movie.
Have you seen Crazy Stupid Love?
I don't think I have.
Watch Crazy Stupid Love.
Anyway, The Notebook. They're an old couple, and she's got Alzheimer's and can't remember things, so he reads from her old notebook. Spoiler. but it's got this really fanciful view of what all this is. And there's the weight of tragedy just isn't there. It's just a little bit too fluffy and a little bit too romance novel.
Tony, I cried at the end.
No, I didn't. That's for people's feelings. This movie, I felt, was just a lot more realistic.
Yes.
It just felt more real, felt more authentic. When his daughter comes and is trying to talk him out of, and this is the scene that really sold it, like the whole movie for me. When she comes and she says, look, you can't do this anymore. We need to do something about Mom. And when he just turns around and says, what are you going to do? Are you going to put her in a home? Are you going to take care of her? Are you going to change her diaper? Are you going to do... And he just starts listing all the stuff he does every day for her. Are you going to do this? Or are you going to take her out of her home and put her someplace where other people are going to do this? Because if that's the case, then I don't think you understand what's going on. And his exchange... Everything he said to her was just like, yeah, stick it to her. When looking at it from her point of view, it's like she had a lot of valid points, but we had been seeing everything he was doing for her every day, all the time.
Yeah.
And how selflessly he did it. With the except, I mean, there was
that awkward slap.
That slap was bad.
But that's the point where his patience is beginning to really wear thin.
Exactly.
It's the
tipping point.
And it's a tipping point. It's bad. But I can see it. I mean, you can see everything he had done, and with such love and such patience, that it's like he just snapped. He had a moment.
Well, everybody who's in a relationship like that, it just wears you down tremendously day in and day out. It just, there had to be a breaking point with his with his own mind. And that's what his daughter was concerned about. I mean, it's not so, we know mom's not going to get better, but you're still here. And it's not going to do you any good either if you collapse.
At the same time, you almost get the sense that, and I think they kind of allude to it at the end, is that this is what he's living for. This is it. This is his life.
Mm-hmm. That's what he wants. That's why you don't see anything else outside of the house.
Right.
Other than the theater.
Yep.
And the only time that you see anything outside the house, it's with him and her when she's fine.
Right. Right.
Like she is his life.
She is his life. And that's it.
His life went to the theater, and then his life went to the house, and then you don't see anything else get that life
at least
the house.
Everything else is just things that need to get done to get back to his life. And I thought that was a good way of showing that, just leaving everything in the house. He could have had meetings with his daughter outside the house while the nurses were taking care of her. Or he could have, you know, other things could have happened outside of the house.
Yeah, like he could have continued to go shopping and all that other stuff.
But they never show that.
Well, he was paying people to do it for him, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, one of the things I liked about this movie was the conversations between the two of them were really natural. Like, when he comes home, he's telling her about the funeral. Like, it doesn't feel like terrible movie dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, oh, I went to this funeral and it was awful. Kids were talking in the back and crying. I felt bad for the wife.
And they were. It was this weird thing they did where they put the urn on an electrical on a dolly, and
they rolled out there.
And it moved so slow.
Yeah, because you could totally see conversations like that. I could see that. You know, you and Melina probably have conversations. I know Julie and I have conversations like that, where it's just. They're meaningless.
They're meaningless, but the way
they fill the space.
Well, mm-hmm. you fall into a cadence when you tell a story. You've been with somebody for so long that you don't have much to talk about. So these stories fall into a particular cadence, and it doesn't matter what you're saying. It's just that you're communicating something different.
Right.
Like I told that exact same story to Melina about Eric and his piano or his keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
So this keyboard is massive. It's like the size of this table, and Eric can't carry it and the stand at the same time. And so Luke's got like these narrow staircases. It's like the exact same cadence that he tells the story of the funeral in.
Yep.
Which I appreciate as a subtle. It's interesting, too, that...
And sometimes you just tell stories to your spouse just to have something to talk about.
Yeah.
Fill the space.
Yeah, exactly.
To fill the space, yeah.
Yeah, I know she doesn't care. I don't really care, but you know, it's something to do.
And sometimes you tell this long, drawn-out story because you have this one point that you want to make.
Yeah.
And you'll tell a story for 20 minutes to get to that one point, and then you get distracted, and then it's like, it's all gone. Yeah, it's all gone.
It's all gone.
Eric.
You've Eric'd the conversation.
Yeah. So I appreciated that. What was also interesting to me was that his intonation and the things he said during it were like the same things that I would say, but he's not even speaking the same language. Like, this is a completely separate world. Like, Paris looks old and dirty. From everything I know about Paris from this one apartment, it looks old and dirty.
That's the one thing I did like, that the apartment looked
worn,
lived in. Really lived in. Like the super old locks and
when he's at the sink, like, there's just crap around the sink.
Yeah.
Like, little jars that say love and, like, little pictures and shit on it, like, you know, you pick up at any. Remember when I bought that ridiculous thing, and now it's just sitting on the counter.
Yep.
Yeah, it felt really organic.
Uh-huh.
It also had long periods of silence like that.
Yeah, that's what I talk about. Some of the technical detail of this thing, this movie, is really kind of fascinating. The way the director sets these shots up, he likes to go in and just lock the camera, and the actors just sit there in frame, and he doesn't change the focus, he doesn't change the zoom. Or anything, but they just sit there like a stage play sometimes with this dialogue going back and forth. He doesn't even have change points of view. I mean, it's just like sets the camera up, locks it in the frame, and says start talking, and the actors just go.
Yeah, and that was incredibly boring for me.
I know. I found that. I think that I've heard of that is called like the Mexican soap opera style, where you just have a locked camera and all the action just takes place in the frame. There was almost hardly any tracking shots in this movie.
Nobody was in a B outfit?
Nobody was in a B outfit. Technically, I mean, this movie, the director chose a very, very deliberate, static point of view all the time in this thing. It's both distracting and fascinating at the same time. If you're used to the fast smash cuts and fast feeds and just the camera verte, it's really disorienting just to sit there and just watch everything just take place in front of you in frame with no changes. And just these, yeah, you like to say these long dialogues, these long passages of just the actor moving from one location to the other with nothing taking place. Now, you can say this is great acting because it puts all the work on the actor to make this look natural. And I'll give credit. This cast did a really wonderful job. Especially our lead actor there, his name here, Jean-Louis, I think it's I'm probably going to mangle this, Tredegant, who had to do all the work in this movie physically. Well, Emmanuel Riva, you know, she had a hard time.
Oh, she didn't lay there.
Well, she had a hard job of trying to be disabled. This is not easy to do, even with appliances and makeup and all the other stuff. It's hard to play disabled people that's not a caricature. And she did a wonderful job of that. And he had the harder job of trying to constantly be the actor in motion, the physical acting, while maintaining the emotional presence. I mean, this movie is very interesting. It's like you say, it's got tedious long passages. I mean, they could have edited this thing out probably about a half hour to make it a little better pace.
No,
but I think that again, that was a deliberate choice was to make this as tedious as drawn out as possible because we're looking at the man's daily life, how much tedium it is.
Yeah, thematically, it was very good.
Yeah, I liked the pace. There are some movies
goddamn boring.
The pace of the movie was absolutely necessary.
Set to be slow.
I think it had to be that pace. In talking about the long shots and everything, one of the pieces of trivia is that the film is 127 minutes long and contains only 236 total cuts, including the title card. The average shot length is just over 32 seconds. Compare that to any action movie, that's ridiculously long.
Well, yeah, you have hundreds and hundreds of shots
fast
in
cut.
There. Well, fast cuts, smash cuts, traverses, focuses. I mean, you take a movie like The Avengers. I mean, there was over probably 2,000 different scenes in that thing, not including all the special effects.
Yeah, it was probably hundreds of cuts just in the last fight scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just in Scarlett Johansson's butt costume.
Well, that deserves hundreds of cuts.
She is cut.
True.
She's also engaged now, Tony.
What?
Yep.
That's bullshit.
It's bullshit.
You mentioned this only took 200. It was only 200 scenes in this movie, individual ones.
236 total cuts.
Okay. Just to give you an example of something that when Rosemary's Baby was being filmed by Roman Polanski and William Castle was a producer, Polanski had one scene in there he did 35 takes on. Castle comes back and tells Polanski, he said, I did an entire movie in 35 takes. So you think about that for a second of, you know, where they come from B horror movies that Castle was used to doing in the Hollywood production scheme, as opposed to now where they'd say, you know, 200 takes. It's ridiculous.
Well, this isn't 200 takes. This is
200 cuts.
200 cuts.
Okay.
It's 200 changes of
scenes.
Yeah,
scenes. Yeah, point of view.
Yeah.
Aspect. But still, that's often small because these individual scenes
really
seem awful long, even though they're only about 30-some seconds supposedly apiece.
And this is what I think lends itself a lot to the natural feel of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when the concert stage guy comes by,
yeah.
But the camera's awkwardly positioned, so you see him sit down in the chair, and then what's-his-face, George. George, he goes and gets some water or something, or he goes and gets what's-her-face.
Yeah.
So he leaves, and so the concert guy's just sitting in the chair, you know, like, trying to get comfortable, awkwardly shifting around because he knows an uncomfortable scene is, like, an uncomfortable encounter is coming. So, you know, it just feels real natural because the majority
naturally
of
awkward
movies, yeah, because you don't see that in a lot of movies. Like, it seems too prepared. Like, there's not enough stutter in the movies. Like, it seems too edited.
Now, what's really interesting for how natural all the conversations also seem.
Yeah, that they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Not a word of the script was changed during production. The film was shot exactly as it was written, word for word. That astounds me.
Well, to be fair,
the level of writing that took for all that dialogue to happen so naturally without anything changing. Because, I mean, let's be honest, you get into a pace of a conversation, and if the characters are well established, you may have them just say, riff on something for 5 minutes, and you know, we'll put something together from that. None of that happened.
To be fair, this movie comparatively had not that much dialogue.
It didn't, but all those conversations seemed so natural.
They did. They really did. I mean, but a lot of them are one-sided.
Yeah, true.
Or really uncomfortable. The conversation
uncomfortable.
Appropriately uncomfortable. Right. Like the scene is designed like a concert guy and them talking.
Not like George Lucas dialogue uncomfortable.
No, not bad uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, well, just to be fair, his director was the writer too. So
sure, sure.
And maybe it's, again, just because he's using his notoriety, plus these are very, very veteran actors. So they don't need a lot of ad-libbing or anything else to make it work.
I looked up Emmanuel Riva when she was young. That chick was hot.
Really?
Yeah. French hot chick. Yeah. What do you think about that nude scene?
So apparently she was extremely uncomfortable about the nude scene, but finally agreed to do it because she thought it was extremely important for the story and that she would do it as Anna. The character she was playing and not herself.
I don't feel like that dude scene was essential to the story.
I don't think it was essential either.
I think it was because it shows, again, the loss of your dignity or her loss of dignity.
There was that, but they could have done it. I mean,
reaction shots on him.
There was so much of it that was also done with the woman standing right in front of her.
Yeah, like
that, like, shifting just slightly, you wouldn't have seen anything.
That was a weird. I read the trivia too, and I was like, necessary? I don't know. Listen, I'm all for boob in a movie, but I don't know if this is necessary. This isn't what I would call critical boob.
I can see, though, that the loss of dignity and the fact that he had to step back and let somebody else do that was hard, you know?
Yeah. By the way, we didn't talk about it, but I think both he and her were fantastic.
Oh, the acting was... Those two were incredible.
Who won Best Actress?
It wasn't her...
Might have, should have been.
Well, they won every other award possible.
Damn it. It wasn't Jennifer Lawrence this year, was it? Last year?
Yes. I think it was.
Now, what Silver Linings was last year?
No.
So now, explain one thing at the end, which I either missed or didn't understand. When he writes the long letter, or he dictates that letter, and then he turns around and sees her standing at the sink, and they get their coat and they go out. That was his hallucination or dream, or was that supposed to be symbolic that he's more or less left the building at this point, literally and figuratively speaking?
Oh, I thought he died.
I think it's left for interpretation because they don't explicitly say.
Yeah, because the next scene is Eva coming back, walking through the empty apartment. Now, is this after Anna has been found and removed, or is this right after George has left and they haven't found her body yet?
I can't imagine that it is after George has left and they haven't found her body yet, just because the way they were reacting to the smell in the apartment in the opening scene.
Right.
So they don't give a clear indication, but considering how easily she's moving through the apartment and they had to break down doors to get into the apartment, I believe it's sometime after they found the body.
Right.
Now, so it's
the question
her...
is, what happened to George? Did he just go to the police, or did he just commit suicide?
He ascended.
Or what? Yeah, he ascended to heaven because of his good work.
Really? What about the criminal action? First off, there's no way you could prove. I don't know that there's any criminal suit there, and I don't think he feels guilty about it either.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he feels guilty about it.
Yeah, I mean,
I think considering the course, I didn't
understand. Was he doing that because he was trying to end Anna's pain, or was he just frustrated at his own?
I think this was his final act of love.
That's what I would kind of. But I kind of looked at.
Or that's his just. I mean, that I at the very least, that will be his justification for it. You know, his...
Well, I think that's his surrender to, I'm the only person in this scenario who's had the hope that we're going to get through this. And finally, I have to admit, okay, the only person who wants this is me. And the only reason she's still alive is for me. And that's not fair to her.
Right. Right.
And I think when he slaps her, I think that's when he realizes, yeah, this is not for her anymore.
Right.
This has really never been for her.
Yeah, and I think that was the realization, and then him telling the story about his childhood at the end was him saying, yeah, I'm ready to let you go now, and here it comes.
Yeah.
You can't do anything about it.
Remember all those stories I never told you? Here's one.
Yeah. Pillow squish.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I don't care what happened to him. I don't care if his image of seeing her healthy and able-bodied and physically fit and able to walk out and to tell him, you need to get your coat now, we're going. I don't think it matters what that was, but it's his
very strange closure. Let's put it this way.
I don't think so.
I think it was his closure. I think it was him saying goodbye one last time to the woman that he loved, to let the audience feel that he's not thinking of her
This is how I remember you. Yeah,
as,
I mean, because the entire movie she's like, I don't want people to remember me like this.
Right. Still older, but physically fit. I mean, until her stroke, she looked in better health than he did, because he had a limp throughout that they never really explained. And he obviously wasn't in perfect health.
Right.
He was in his 80s.
Yeah, he was doing a hell of a lot to keep this thing going.
Yeah.
And it surprisingly didn't take a bigger toll on him.
The thing is this was all he did, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times when you have people taking care of an older parent or something like that,
yeah,
they're also working and they've got their own family. Mm-hmm. This was his life. He had nothing else to do. Yes. And this is what he wanted to do.
Or that he could do.
I don't know if it was the only thing he could do, but it was all he could do to help her.
Right.
What is people's obsession with eating boiled eggs for like breakfast? What is up with that?
I don't know, kind of European thing.
Like that pedestal thing with the egg. Like that's a like see that every oh, yeah, European that's, movie that is we a, watch.
That's
that
is a, no, that's not a boiled egg. That's a 3-minute egg.
What the hell is that?
Essentially, you just cook them inside the shell.
Yeah, like boil it.
They're still soft.
Mm-hmm. Soft boiled egg.
Ew.
Yeah, they're just hard enough that you get the shell off, but it's still.
They're still running on the inside. I think that's kind of a European thing.
It's all spoogey inside.
Yeah. There you go. There's another
spoogey egg.
There's your band name. Spoogey inside.
No, I like the movie. I'm glad I saw it. I don't know that I ever need to see it again.
All right, but here's the big question. You know this question was coming.
When's the sequel coming out?
Amore 2. Amore
harder. More.
More and
more to George Fox.
George steps out.
He
George remarries.
He's Scarlett Johansson.
Weekend at Amore's.
Amore 2. George parties down.
Oh.
Anna, he weekend at Bernie's Anna.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Goes clubbing in the Paris Club scene.
That wasn't the question. The real question is, of the Best Picture nominees, where does this one rank? I got to look up what the nominees were because I remember
I've got
two
it right
of
here.
Them.
I've got it right here.
Oh, see? You knew it was coming.
All right. So the movies, and we've seen the only one we have not seen and talked about is Zero Dark Thirty.
No, we didn't see. Oh, I didn't see Les Miserables.
Oh, okay. We didn't talk about Les Miserables. Wait a minute. Yeah, we did.
We didn't talk about this.
No. Did we?
We all agreed not to talk about it.
I talked about it many times and complained about it many times. That's how that happened.
Nobody wanted to see it because we've all already seen it.
So we had Amore, Argo, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Miserables, Zero Dark Thirty, Silver Linings Playbook, Lincoln, and Life of Pi.
Well, I'm putting Les Mis and Zero Dark Thirty at the bottom.
I'm with you because we haven't seen them.
Well, I've seen Les Mis anymore.
I've seen Les Mis, and I'll comfortably say it's at the bottom.
I've seen Les Mis.
I'll take the bullet and say that's safely.
Zero Dark Thirty just zero interest.
I'm the same way. if Django Unchained would have cut the last 30 to 45 minutes,
when Christoph Waltz,
when Christoph Waltz died, if that's when it ended, and then they show a scene like halfway through the credits where you see Django carrying Brunhilde out with the fire, with the building burning down around him, like carrying her out and she's hugging on him, and
yeah,
it's like,
I would have been fine with that. Yeah, that's much higher,
but yeah, that one, I think it was, I think it just suffered a little bit there.
A little too contrived an ending. At the heart of the soul of that movie died before the end of the movie, which was a problem.
Right.
I thought if it's gonna die, it needs to die at the end of the movie.
And then they need to have a scene where he's walking around in the kitchen, tells Django to get his coat because we're leaving.
Yeah. So that's probably, how many were there? Seven?
Okay, that gets us down to six. So we're at Amor, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings, Beasts, and Argo. All
right, so Lincoln is the bottom of that list for me.
I think Lincoln is
weaker than the rest of those movies.
Yes, and I think Silver Linings Playbook is toward the bottom of that list, too.
Yeah, I think that's weaker than the other three. Four.
For me, I'm going to put Life of Pi at around number four. So I'm gonna. For me, the top three is Amor, Argo, and Beasts of the Southern Wild.
I want to put Argo.
Having not seen Beasts of the Southern Wild, I have to choose between the other two. I'm gonna say Argo was the somewhat better picture, although this was an awful good second.
I think I'd put Argo. I liked Argo. I really liked Argo, but it wasn't. It didn't have a poignancy to it that Beasts of the Southern Wild and Amor had.
Yes. And Life of Pi and Amor, I think Argo and Life of Pi for you and me are swapped.
Right? And that's, yeah, I'm
I think Argo's I'm weaker. Like
comfortable with that. Yeah. I'm comfortable with that assessment. But I think Beasts of Southern Wild and Amor are probably my top two.
Both had Best Actress nominations.
And both actresses were fantastic.
They were also the oldest and youngest actresses ever nominated in the same year.
Both were fantastic.
It's such a hard call.
It is. It is.
Beasts
because
was really good.
Amor was really good and super grounded in reality. And Beasts was really good and had some amazing, fantastic elements to it that just lend itself to the story they were trying to tell.
Yeah. It also had that weird strip club.
Ultimately,
Amor didn't have a weird strip club.
I think I'm gonna go down to the one thing that the last thing is that I've seen Amor and I don't think I need to see it again. But I would watch Beasts of the Southern Wild again. I would watch that movie again.
I told Molina this morning that Amor would take my number
Beasted.
One.
Beasted.
Beast Wars. God damn, I love Beast Wars.
It's really close.
You would not be disappointed with either of them.
No, absolutely not.
But there,
some great movies.
Unless you were expecting an action movie, then you might be disappointed.
You know what, though? I mean, there were movies in here that were weaker than others. This was a lot of good movies in this list.
There are a lot of good movies.
I mean, well, by saying weaker, we only mean that compared to each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's very tough to pick, which one is, quote-unquote, the best. I mean, we're all going to have different tastes in our movies.
I think it'd probably be what day of the week you asked me. Mm-hmm. It would really matter between Amor and Beasts of the Southern Wild.
I know, thinking back on Beast, now I'm questioning my Amor taking
the time. I'm going to say Beast just because if you put both of them on the table right now and said you have to watch one, I'd without a doubt grab Beast and put it in.
I would agree with that, but only because I watched Amor last night.
Yeah?
I might feel differently about that, like in a month, if you put them both on the table.
Six months, we should revisit that and see. I'm not going
to
do that. I'm just saying.
I told Melina, you got to go downstairs.
Put it on the calendar.
You got to go downstairs and watch this. We can't watch this one together.
Amor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not. First 10 minutes, I was like, God, I'm glad Melina's downstairs.
Julie and I, because Julie wanted to watch something, and she was watching the TV, so I just put the DVD in my laptop and was watching it with headphones. She's like, what are you watching? So I told her, and she said, what is that? So I described about the first 10 or 15 minutes of it, basically through the stroke and how he comes back. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm fine. And Julie's going, I said, yeah. So I don't know that she'll ever watch it because she still has some real freshness to what happened to her mom, too. Yeah. Now, granted, it wasn't
fresh, but same way.
It wasn't like this,
but
there are some similarities.
It touches on the same nerves that you're, if
it's
you have a
too real.
It is. It is very real. And
I told Melina what the ending was, just so she would not watch it.
So that was one thing that kind of pissed me off. Because I, not the ending, because I kind of expected the ending. I kind of expected that he would kill her.
Sure.
I kind of thought that that's where it would go. Just because this was an Oscar-nominated movie, and I figured there had to be some really big hook
right.
to make it that good. No, what pissed me off was just as the movie starts, it pops up the PG-13 warning on the DVD. The PG-13 warning is rated PG-13 for mature thematic material, including a disturbing act, and for brief language. Are you... It was like, wow. The rating gave it away.
Yeah.
I mean, I expected it. I really expected it. Figured that's what
Well,
happened.
You know, Tony.
But it was just disappointing.
I watched it on Apple TV, so I didn't have any of that nonsense.
I ran it on Redbox. It was only $1.20.
So. Well, you saved money, but I didn't have to leave my couch.
I went to Walgreens and bought snacks while I did it, and I ate during the movie. So.
Well, I hate Walgreens win. And you.
Well, give me my cord book back.
I'm out of bed. That's it. Never playing again. I hate this.
You aren't a Bechdel boy.
I know why Luke likes that so much. I can't condone his behavior. But I don't have a better band name, so I can't argue with it.
I just thought it was funny.
He's out of control. To calm down.
It only won one Oscar.
For what? Best foreign film?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a weak.
Yeah, it won one Oscar for best foreign film. Best foreign language film of the year. But it was nominated for directing, best motion picture, best performance by an actress in a leading role, and best writing original screenplay.
Wow.
Original screenplay surprised me because, man, this movie felt like a play.
It really did.
And I could see,
the
I could totally see, too. I could totally see this being a play. And a good one.
Well, look at the way it's constructed. It's pretty much filmed like one.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
I can't believe that guy wasn't nominated for Best Actor.
I know.
That's weak.
He was not nominated for a BAFTA either.
That's also weak.
But it did win Best Film Not in the English Language for BAFTA, and it won Best Leading Actress. It was nominated Best Director, Best Original Screenplay. It won a Bavarian Film Award for Best Direction. It won a Bodil.
The Palme d'Or. American, so they don't
it won the Palme d'Or, which I didn't know what that was until I looked it up earlier, and that's for it's the Cannes Film Festival's highest honor, and it's for basically it's for direction.
All right, so here, actor in a leading role: Bradley Cooper, Daniel Day-Lewis, Hugh Jackman, Joaquin Phoenix, and Denzel Washington. I'm confident one of these names does not need to be on this list, and that dude should have been on there.
Yes.
Instead,
he did win a César Award, which is apparently a French film award for Best Actor. She won Best Actress. He won Best Director, Best Film, and Best Original Screenplay. It was also nominated for Cinematography, Editing, Production Design, Sound, and Supporting Actress for The Daughter.
Who I'd say was, those nominations are kind of weak because they didn't have a whole lot of...
Well, these are also, I think, only French films.
Right.
So, it won a lot. It won the Golden Globe for Best Foreign Language Film. It won the Independent Spirit Award for Best International Film.
I heard a lot of weakness in the awards, but maybe there was a good year in other countries.
Well, still, I think it's a pretty stiff competition, too. And granted, like you say, a couple of those could have dropped out, and they would have been he would have been an easy choice. But let's face it, I mean, the Oscars are kind of a little American-centric, so...
Chris Borgnine died last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man.
The Étoile d'Or, which I have no clue what that is. My French is terrible. He won for Best Actor, and the guy won for Best Director. Doesn't say anything about her.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting. She looks like, it looks like across the board, she was more recognized for her acting performance than he was. In both nominations and, well, true. He really didn't.
That goes a long way.
And that it started with the side boob and then went the full-on nip. So
yeah.
She teased it up right.
Work in the audience here.
The most erotic showering a stroke victim ever.
What? The fan service. Gets them every time.
Why do we have an Oscar for that?
This presentation of side boob as a disabled person.
Tony, I'm looking through In Memoriam 2012. It is a fact. Cycling through these pictures. Look at all these people who are dead.
Best actress in a leading role.
That was me.
I think either one of those, either from Beasts or Amore, should have beaten Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, I agree.
I liked Jennifer Lawrence's performance.
It was great.
But I think
it was not the best.
Either one of them should have beat her.
Either one.
Yeah. Clearly, the Hunger Games audience voted for Silver.
Surprising there.
Book. I got nothing else.
Yep, I think we've done it.
All right.
We've dead people now.
So last week we did Face Off. This week we did Amore. Next week we're doing Dread.
Dread.
Yeah.
We are nothing if not versatile.
All movies in the same theme and genre. Serious, killing. Contemplative dramas. Dramas.
Killing. Yeah. People die. All those movies.
People die in all movies.
Things happen to their faces. Wow. Yeah. I haven't seen Dread, but I know he never takes the mask off.
Oh, so Griffith is dead.
Yeah.
Man, this is enlightening. I vaguely remember hearing that all these people died.
People die.
Well, here's the thing, Tony. When people die who are famous, I don't go on about it on Twitter and Facebook for like 7 weeks. Ooh, this guy was a great impact on my life. Yeah, whatever. Come on, get over it. I have a very cynical cold view of death. All right, they're dead. Move on.
You have a worse view about strokes.
Yeah, I'm pro-stroke.
Oh, Alzheimer's too. Yeah. Oh, that's right. You're predisposed.
Pro-stroke, pro-cancer. It's a whole platform over here.
All the deadly ones. That's all right. The trendy ones, too.
But not pro-heart disease, because that shit's serious.
That's very pedestrian, too.
What about breast cancer, though? Right. Sausage Fest. Yeah. We got Sausage Fest to take care of that.
Yeah.
There you go. Pro-every other
we're
kind
supporting.
Of cancer.
We support breast cancer.
Oh, shit, I gotta pay. I gotta donate.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Yeah, you lazy bastard.
Because somebody at this table has.
More to come.
Today, by the way, was a good day for Sausage Fest donations. We went from $190 in donations total to $340.
Woo-hoo.
Whoa.
Hey, good day.
Ramping it up.
Good day for donations. Whoa. So SausageFestSTL.com. Donate.
Please.
At some point, I'm going to get some pictures up of the shirts and the hoodies. And
yes. Please donate. It's for a good cause.
We're trying to.
Maybe a butt.
Okay, so Way does this Lingerie Tuesday on Facebook.
Oh, come on. That's cheating.
So I asked her because she posted a Lingerie Tuesday picture yesterday. So I responded.
Facebook.
I don't know. I responded to that photo that she posted with Sausage Fest shirt and Lingerie Tuesday. Because she's not coming to Archon this year. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's got... it sounds like every weekend she's at a con somewhere and she's just
burnt out,
taking some time off. Yeah, I can't blame her. She's been a big help for us though. So
I like when I look up Weihe. It is nothing but Chinese names and full Chinese characters except for Weihe.
Tell you what, I could sign onto my Facebook and suggest her as a friend if you want. That might make
no,
it
no,
easier.
I'm friendly.
You got her. And don't forget One Way Cafe, which is her mm-hmm.
her
business.
Her website.
So much meat on here. So much meat.
Alright. All right. See you guys next week for Dread.
Yep. See you then.
Bye bye.
Yeah, maybe.
Whatever.